Blog Talk Radio.
To This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network and Affiliates. Hello, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator and producer of the broadcast. And today, on a very busy day, which we're going to hear a lot about, we resume our continuing coverage of the emerging digital health economy with a preview of what's in store at the Health 2.0 conference with co-founder and President Matthew Holt, a.k.a. at BoltyBoy on Twitter, and his partner, Indu Subbiah, at Blue Topaz on Twitter. And I'm pleased to say that back in the virtual booth is my co-host extraordinaire, Dr. Phil Marshall, Chief Product Officer at Conversa Health. Welcome, Phil.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be back with you after a busy summer.
Yeah, I'm actually honored and pleased to say we both took the month of August off, which is a well-deserved break. And we are now back in the saddle here, priming the pump for an exciting series of broadcasts inside the digital health ecosystem over the next series of shows. And This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we cover the digital health economy from idea to business model. Follow us on the web at www.healthinnovationmedia.com. Now for some information about our guests today, our very special guests, including Matthew Holt. Matthew has been a curator and catalyst in the digital health conversation for some time now. Some might even say he and his co-founder and partner, Indu Subbiah, have been the principal stewards of this emerging and expanding conversation, to which there's been a rather recent flood of, shall we say, latecomers, and that's not what I wrote in my opening text here, yet standing tall in this sea of competition for the heads and beds equivalent of conference registrations. L 2.0 still walks the talk and models best practices for our industry, and that's just my take. Matthew Holt, let me tell you about him. He's been working on healthcare and IT for more than 20 years. He started the healthcare blog in 2003 and co-founded Health 2.0 in 2007 and remains hopeful and that new technologies can improve everyone's health and experience. And I'll let you hear more about Indu from them direct. And with that very quick info, let's get over to Phil and let's talk about what's going on today.
Well, thank you very much, Greg. And Matthew and Indu, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Hey, thanks, Phil.
And what a day it is. If we were to pick a day for a discussion of digital health, I'm not sure we could have picked a better one. First, of course, as you look ahead to the Health 2.0 Fall Conference down in Santa Clara, I believe this year, coming up in a couple of weeks, but also on a day where only moments ago, Tim Cook and the Apple team just wrapped up a discussion of their upcoming iPhone 6 and something else that is very likely to shake up the at least the consumer digital health world, and that is the Apple Watch. And so let's start with this. The conference that's coming up has really always been the premier conference on examining the digital health ecosystem and the trends and things that are to come, and always a very good energy at that conference. In fact, I was just at another one, which was quite fun as well, around connected health, and somebody mentioned to me, boy, doesn't it seem like there are a lot of these conferences and a lot of them about patient engagement these days, to which I said, of course, yes, but of course the kingpin of them all is Health 2.0. So real briefly, as we look ahead, and we're going to be talking Apple and we're going to be talking Health Watch, but first let's get a preview, just a little bit of a preview of what's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks with your fall conference.
Well, Phil, thank you very much. This is Matthew, and a rather late notice. My partner and co-founder of Health Development, CEO of Indie Survivors on as well. So Indie has been the driving force behind, I think, Health 2.0's differences in its production values over the years, as well as all the other stuff that we do that's not related to our conference, including our competitions and challenges and innovation practice as well. So it's glad to be on with you, and thanks for your nice comments here. We're kind of feeling kind of old because, Indie, we've been doing this one. This is the eighth one coming up, which is going to we're getting past our 7-year itch, you know, in terms of how long we've been around. So I think let's dive into the Apple stuff in a second, which is really exciting. We also have the Samsung announcement earlier in the year, which was sort of rushed out, I think, in some way to get up in front of HealthKit, which is perhaps as exciting as the watch that has just been announced a second ago. But before we get there, to give you very broad brush strokes about the conference, every year we get together. Started out being, I think you were at the first one, Phil, sort of around sort of Greg Selling was there, about 400 or 500 people. We're now at about a couple of thousand people get together in now Santa Clara down in the convention center there, coming up on September the 21st with the pre-conferences on the 22nd, 3rd, and 4th, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, just in a couple of weeks. What we tend to do is gather the latest technologies from across the board, and it hits everything from the patient-provider connection. It's a big feature which we're doing this year. What technologies are changing and how they're changing that relationship, something that you in your day job still are getting very involved in, all the way through to a lot of work about data, and a lot of work at data analytics, and a lot of work about sort of new providers, new types of tools for providers, sort of driven by the new types of purchases, such as new employers with their in-store clinics and how consumers are buying care somewhat differently online and dealing with their doctors in a different way. And then, of course, perhaps the last, last but not least of our big features this year is on sort of new wearables, and even we're actually even having a fashion show. So, Indie, why don't you say two words about the wearables and the fashion show why we think that's so important, and then that will kind of lead into perhaps a more in-depth discussion we should all have about what Apple's just announced and how that's fitting into the ecosystem.
Yeah, and it's interesting because a few years ago, I don't even think we used the term wearables. This is relatively new to me, and I was invited to keynote the Smart Fabrics and Wearables Conference a few months ago in San Francisco, and it was the first time they had somebody keynoting from the digital health industry, a conference that has gone on for many, many years. The idea that sensors can be embedded in forward-looking materials has been a science that's very advanced in many aspects, but the fact that we can now do this for health from, the shirts that we wear and, the things we put around our wrists to even the sensors in our home, I think it really is a new era. We're focusing on it within the context of the larger consumer technology landscape that Health 2.0 has always featured from the start, and we decided to try something fun this year. I thought doing a fashion runway would actually be fun because we do have, clothing, we have jewelry. I believe Matthew's newest addition to the whole family, Baby Arrow, will be modeling a hereby undisclosed sensor for little babies. So it'll be a ton of fun. But I think it's fascinating to see the convergence, if you will, of hardware, software, and then these large platforms. And seeing how the ecosystem is shifting, with especially the big players kind of planting a stake in one camp or the other. I think Apple certainly leading with design and products that, a lot of focus on form factor. Samsung making statements around, data analytics and being a platform, being very open. Apple's going to be doing that too. We're still waiting to hear more about where Google is going with Google Fit. And seeing Nike, stop manufacturing a piece of hardware and going into the software play, I think it's going to be a very, very interesting time, and we're delighted that Health 2.0 is right in the heart of it.
That's great background and really provides a foundation for the kinds of expertise that you two bring to the table as we now consider some of the implications of these recent announcements. And I really do want to dive right into that. I know we've got a lot of listeners today that really want you know, some perspective on the announcements today and those that have recently come out about really making digital health far more accessible to more people in real time and in a continuous way through things like the HealthKit API, the Samsung and Google APIs for health, and the wearables. And I'd like to jump right into what we've been watching. I know, and I've got to thank GigaOM today because they have been doing a great live blog on the Apple live event today down in the Bay Area. And in addition to Apple Pay and the iPhone 6 announcements, they talked about the new Apple Watch. We had been previously calling it iWatch, but I believe from everything I saw, the official phrase is Apple Watch. And so I'd like to just reflect on some of the things that I saw and some of the chatter that I'm seeing on Twitter about the announcement. It appears that there are that the Apple Watch is going to require an iPhone. First of all. Second of all, it will come in a variety of different styles and models, including an 18-karat gold version, which I probably will steer away from due to its hefty price. The price of the standard Apple Watch is expected to be over $300. I think I saw something on the order of $349 or something like that. And so it's not cheap, at least out of the gate. But things that it will do include having sensors, accelerometer, pulse rate sensors that can feed into fitness applications, as well as being an interface for answering questions, seeing notifications, and even seeing the time, believe it or not. Yes, that's right, being able to see the time. Very exciting there. And so I wanted to, as we consider that announcement and the breakthrough that it could represent, at least in the accessibility of this kind of information, could you just give me your thoughts about how important it is, how it fits into the ecosystem? Is it truly something that people are clamoring for?
Well, I think that what I've been saying for a while is that it really helps. I've been giving this joke speech for a while where I show the Samsung watch, I show the Samsung Fit and Samsung watches, I show the Qualcomm is getting into this, and it's serious large companies are now getting into the business of doing things that now enable people to track aspects of their health and fitness all over the place. It's not just startups, even though some of the startups like, you know, Jawbone and Fitbit have now become quite large companies. And obviously with the biggest sort of consumer electronics companies they basically are now in the world, getting into the game, joining Samsung, so you've got the two biggest giants now who decided they're going to, you know, push this effort of the watch plus the data store behind it very heavily, you've got a really significant tipping point. Now, obviously it remains to be seen whether people buy this and when, how many people actually end up using it and using the data, using the health part as opposed to just the rest of the regular notifications and the time and the other stuff that it does. But I it's hard to imagine that Apple won't sell a lot of these watches in the next time. Whether they sell the billions of them the way they do smartphones is another question. But you know, then you've got the question of what aspects of health and fitness is going to work for. And I think, you know, my initial first blush is that it looks to me as though Apple's gone more for the fashion and is directly going against the sort of the Jawbones and the Fitbits, and for that matter, the Basis watch, which debuted at Health 2.0 a couple of years ago and was subsequently bought by Intel, and it's trying to sort of do a lot with heartbeat. And rest of that kind of stuff, whereas Samsung was perhaps more ambitious, had a lot of stuff built into the strap, which included blood pressure and trying to do sort of EKG stuff as well. So it's a question about how, quote-unquote, medical they're getting versus fit, and I think we'll have to see more about that in the future. But we do know that Apple has been talking to a lot of health organizations that already announced a deal with the Mayo Clinic and some work it was doing with Epic. So, you know, there's a lot clearly that's going on. And the health kit, or software, you know, what we call data utility layer, or what we call data storage layer, or platform, that many other companies are now starting to build to, even though it's only been out a couple of months, is going to be very influential in terms of, again, storing data. Having said that, we know that with Google Health and some others in the past, we have some false starts about getting this kind of data, getting this, you know, data shared for consumers in a way that's instead of getting the world you've been looking for forever, you know, instead of getting data out of the provider world, we're trying to figure out how to get data out of the provider world, which has been the struggle. You know, can you get the other way? Can you start with data coming from consumers, whether it's devices like the Apple Watch or the Samsung Watch, you know, and drive and start driving activity that way? And that's something that we've been, again, watching very, very carefully. So I think it's an interesting, you know, it's a big deal, no question. It's a huge deal for our space as a whole. The question is, you know, how does it actually play out? And what useful types of information are there? So that's what I think I have.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm just going to sort of build on something that you said, and that is the real question that has to be out there if you're looking at this enormous healthcare industry, the $17 trillion industry that it is, the 18% of our gross domestic product. The question becomes, will consumers become equal partners in their care and drive the process of healthcare more directly by contributing information into the decision-making process, by contributing the patient-generated data into the care process? Today's announcement from Apple with Apple Watch building on HealthKit leads us to believe that patient-generated data is going to be able to be gathered and channeled. But the real question then becomes, how can it impact real care and the decision-making with the care team? And you're right, with my company, Conversa, that's what we're all about and have been focused on. But today's announcement is going to pique so much interest. And so as you think about and as you look at all the parties that are involved in the Health 2.0 conference and just looking ahead in digital health, and maybe I'll pose this into to you, there has always seemed to me to be a real barrier in actually breaking into the clinical workflow, actually bringing the consumer to that, to being an equal party in that process and in the actual data that's used in the clinical setting. And so how do you think about that? Is that a barrier that is now being broken down by technology?
It would be interesting to see. So I agree with you. I agree that it's been a challenge, and in my opinion, the consumer today has access to probably more cutting-edge, you know, health devices and monitoring tools than most physicians, just because, you know, settings of care are really diverse. Not everybody in the physician and provider world is as up to speed, but consumers now have unfettered access to things that can really make a difference and might be light years ahead of what their doctor is offering them. And so I think this unevenness, you know, in the relationship, I think is going to be fascinating to watch. For many years in healthcare, we talked about patient engagement being a challenge. You know, how do we get those patients out there to do what we providers really want them to do? And I think the language now is more like, you know, can my doctor catch up to where I'm at? And will my doctor be as knowledgeable about me as I am about myself? That is fundamentally very, very exciting. You know, will the watch form factor in particular do something to change that dynamic? I'm not so sure, because right now I can still, you know, bring data to my doctor. It doesn't have to be necessarily be on a wearable. I think more has to change for that information flow to really make sense. And I think it's probably going to come, if you have to ask me, it's going to come when these data get aggregated across populations and large systems start to pay attention. So, you know, we talk about this with Samsung, and they're partnering with large groups that are going to take the population health approach to the data they're collecting on their smartphones. I think when that sort of tips and institutions go, wow, this data is more compelling or possibly giving us more insights than our standard medical records alone, then I think the culture might shift to individual physicians saying, sure, bring in your blood pressure cuff readings. But I don't know if sort of case-by-case, you know, encounter-by-encounter approach is going to change much. I would like it to, but I think it's going to take that population health sort of, you know, aha moment.
Oh, Indu, that was a great segue because how care teams and health systems view their patients is changing. We know that it historically has been a visitor encounter based system, and of course our payment models have only reinforced that, but that's now changing. We know that population health management, quality measurement, and reporting has emerged as something, especially through meaningful use, is now far more commonplace. And now this notion of engaging patients and patients being equal partners in their care. I've said for quite a while that in fact this whole domain of patient engagement and that whole domain of population health management really are one and the same. They have to be one and the same. And so as people become more proactive with their health and care teams want to know how their patients are doing because their pay is now being predicated on it in part, and perhaps also it's just a more efficient way of managing patients. How can the care team themselves best take advantage of this? I mean, after all, and again, this is something that I've been very focused on with my career and what I've been doing, but I really want to hear from your perspective, how can care teams best take advantage of this to know how their hypertensives or their diabetics are doing when HealthKit has 10,000 data points? They don't want all of that. How do you decipher the signal from the noise?
So I had a little joke video I used last year at Health People Now, which I think is still very true, which is a fantastic you would know this still living up in Oregon. In California, we have this lottery, a fantastic California lottery advert commercial with they're playing, Mamas and Papas, California Dreaming in the background, and it's raining ping pong balls, white ping pong balls. And finally, there is out of the sky comes one orange ping pong ball, which is the color of the California lottery, and somebody catches it and wins the lottery, right? He gets the one in the gazillion. And that's what we need. We need a system, and I think, you are clearly in this space, where you take all this amount of data and you look at probably the exceptions and the encapsulation of the trends so that what you're delivering to the clinician is when does somebody actually need an intervention. And you, instead of looking at all the data, you're looking at, you're getting the trend, you're getting the exceptions. You're figuring out who needs what care when and who needs to be triaged at what time based on the data that you're collecting. Because given not only a future we're going to of, wearables, but also things like smart homes, Internet of Things, all that kind of good buzzword stuff. But you can see it's coming. Last week I had new blinds installed in my house with an app that makes the blinds go up and down. Things starting to talk to each other across the world, and your health is going to be included in that. So if you think about all those kind of data, the question is how does that fit in the population health, sort of ecosystem to useful information coming into the clinician or the clinician's representatives. And that's the bit that I think we're struggling with. It's never going to be the case that everyone's going to that it's useful to see the huge volume of data. You want the one exceptional piece of data that summarizes what's going on and that which can help you with the patient in front of you, but also can help you when there's outreach required to these patients who are falling off the wagon or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's the key. Deciphering the signal from the noise is really the challenge once you start to get this flow of data. And I was at a conference recently where we talked about primary care. And, of course, common stats that are floated about are the fact that primary care physicians are overwhelmed. They all have 2,000 to 2,500 patients. We're going to be 25,000 primary care physicians short by 2015, et cetera, et cetera. The truth is, and Conversive works with primary care practices, and what we've observed is that when you have continuous data and you're able to decipher down with the frequency that's reasonable for that individual patient, that information coming back to the care team, and you allow them to basically look at their red values versus their yellow and versus their green valued patients to know who's on track and who's not, the number of patients that you can support could be far larger, not smaller, it could be far larger and more efficient and maybe even pay those doctors even more to be able to do so. So technology can certainly play a big role with that. And yet you're right. You've got to be able to decipher the signal from the noise. And it's a really, really good point. Now, I want to shift slightly here. We've been talking about Apple Watch, and we haven't talk as much about HealthKit, but certainly two are very related. We know that Mayo and Epic, for instance, have made some announcements and might have even been mentioned as Tim Cook was talking today. By the way, congratulations to Tim Cook on the Apple Watch, which I believe is the first major new product that has actually been under his direct stewardship. So that's a great occasion for him. But as we think about folks like Mayo and Epic interacting with this patient digital health world, and we think about the Health 2.0 conference and all of the entrepreneurial spirit there, one of the things that keeps coming up is unless you're an Epic or a Mayo or an Apple, you just can't get data out of these systems. You can't get these IT shops to open up their systems. And Epic, notoriously a closed system that's difficult to interact with. And so as we deal with that stigma of a lack of openness, how would you characterize the emerging environment for entrepreneurs in healthcare to be able to impact that data, add to that data, utilize that data that resides in a healthcare system?
Well, far be it from me to be the one who ends up defending Epic, but I think yes, they've done what they've done, right? And I've been beaten up in public and private a little bit by senior Epic executives for things I've said about them. But nonetheless, I think that they are moving to a world with Open Epic and some of these announcements where they're making this data more available. They've also got their Care Everywhere, Care Anywhere stuff, which enables them to move around a bit. And they're doing a little bit better. They also have pretty comprehensive patient portals. So, some data is better than no data, right? So I think it's – having said that, we're nowhere near a world of completely open access to data where you can plug in whatever you want. And, in fact, even with you download and transmit, which is allegedly part of especially part of meaningful use too, we're still not quite there in terms of really open access to Epic, to anybody's data. And frankly, my daughter is part of an Epic clinic and I've been able to look at her data, but I haven't been able to extract it. But then you get the other problem in healthcare, which is that next week, the next week after my son was born, which was just a few days ago, this is actually quite funny, having finally, you want the different pediatricians who are using different parts of the Epic system within the Sutter system down in San Francisco. I go to our regular pediatrician who was in Southern part of Epic, and they've moved to a different healthcare system. And now they put in Next Gen, and so all the stuff that we had from Epic is gone. So, you've got an interoperability problem anyway in healthcare. It's good, I think, that the giants of the enterprise world, the Epics and the Cerners and the Meditechs and others, are slowly being brought into this other world, but they're being brought there by consumers. It's not something that they really wanted to do themselves in terms of making that data accessible. But we get back to Indu's point of, a few minutes ago. There is a lot more data from some of the more advanced patients being brought to clinicians, but I think there's, the overwhelming amount of information can be coming from the Internet of Things, whether it's on the wrist, in the home, the weight scale, or whatever, to clinicians, it's going to mean that we have better informed clinicians about their patients, so long, and to your point, Phil, as they are organized properly and given the right tools. Organization that's proper is not seeing the patient once every 3 months in a 20 or 15-minute or 10-minute office visit. So to me, we've got a big opportunity here, but there's a lot of big moving parts. But I think there's a big opportunity here for other players to get look at these open systems. And I think when you see healthcare and the Sammy from Samsung, it's going to be really helping.
Well, we know that health happens between visits. We know that information that's derived only from the clinical encounter is but a small fraction, and only a glimpse, a very small and perhaps inaccurate glimpse on how these patients are actually doing in real life and what I call in the wild. And I'd like to point out to our audience a couple of things. One is that Matthew Holt was just generous and gracious to the good folks in Madison, Wisconsin at Epic Systems. I want to point that out. And congratulations also on your baby. That's fantastic. And I'd like to take a little bit more time with you. I know that we're at the bottom of the half an hour. I'd like to take 15 more minutes with you if you have some time. Do you have the time?
I do, yes.
Excellent, excellent. So building off of that point, you know, my observation has been that when Epic's clients want to implement connectivity to be able to achieve a certain end goal, that they are able to do that. It's not nearly as impossible as they're stigmatized as being. It's just that, you know, they work within their technical framework, which has been built up over decades now, and not necessarily all the newest technology, but still I think that you can work within that. And I think I may have also heard something else from you. Did you say that you were part of a provider that went from Epic to NextGen?
Indeed.
Oh my lord, you heard it here first.
Yeah, so I need to write this up, but it's quasi tragic because I was looking forward to getting all the data on the system, and I don't know how that transition is going to go. And I also had the very unpleasant experience, and this is a topic that Indu has raised in the past in her definition of health 2.0, which is one of the three sort of kingpin parts of the definition is that it cares about the new health 2.0 technologies care about the user experience. And I got to tell you, seeing the medical assistant and the doctor sort of standing around the computer trying to figure out where to click on the next gen system, had they figured out where to click on the Epic system, this new system was not a particularly fun experience as a patient. But I tell you, and it's one of those weird things where if a hospital, but not only if a clinic moves from one system to another, are they likely to have to put in a new EMR? But as you know, Phil, something in the order of 20% of clinics and hospitals say they're going to change their EMR. So, and yet, really, honestly, none of the main standard bearers have got the kind of usability that, you like to see from, an Apple Watch or even a typical, new website or an iPad. So it's a challenge.
Well, it's funny. It's a topic that's been near and dear to my heart for a very long time. In 1998, I published a large study of physician attitudes towards electronic health record systems. I went and reread that study recently and compared it to some of the recent studies that have come out from RAND, Athena Health, and others. And it's remarkable how much their recent findings reflect what we found ages and ages ago when we studied the very first large-scale EHR implementation in the country at Kaiser, and yet, despite those usability issues, the ecosystem it seems to be changing towards team-based approach. It seems to be changing towards the patient and consumer, albeit perhaps too slowly for some of our liking. I know that you're going to be exploring this at the conference coming up in a couple of weeks, and you've got a lot of folks who are going to be demonstrating a lot of forward-looking capabilities. But when it comes right down to it, the regular patient who might have a smart device, or maybe they have a tablet, or maybe they have a computer, but they're probably connected in some way, shape, or form, what is it? I want you to sort of look forward in your, through the looking glass here a little bit. What can we expect are the most likely mainstream technologies that are going to impact regular Americans when it comes to interacting with the healthcare system? What is it that in, say, 5 years is likely, as best that you can tell right now, is most likely to impact that relationship and the care that they get?
So I think at the San Francisco Health 2.0 office, there was recently a poll for how many companies do you think will call themselves the Uber of healthcare? And everybody placed a bet, and I think everybody was under the real number, which is now like more than a dozen in the last few months alone. And I think what that means, you know, broadly speaking, is access to doctors, the right doctor. You know, we can get into what we mean by that, the right doctor for you. Access to clinicians is only going to get easier, and that interaction, whether it takes place in person, via video, via sort of a diagnostic questionnaire that's driven by artificial intelligence, those encounters, I think, are going to get briefer, more targeted, and more intelligent, hopefully. And I think, you know, with the ubiquity of the smartphones and various sort of interfaces we have, we will be able to connect with our doctors more efficiently, and I think that will go mainstream, and whether that's through a Teladoc or a number of other types of companies rolling out these services, I think that that's going to impact Americans. Now, you couple that with what we've been talking about earlier, which is this notion of patient-generated data and, you know, self-monitoring data, and I would go so far as to say, you know, these really become non-invasive diagnostics. Whether they're classified as such by the FDA or not, they're giving information about health to a provider. I think those two things happening at the same time is going to drastically change, you know, I hope, what we get out of visits with our doctor and everything in between. So, you know, to me, I feel like in the past, you know, we've seen telemedicine has existed for decades, and for many years we've talked about kind of video visits and email with your doctor, but there hasn't been this sort of happy convergence of all the variables at one time. The idea that when you do have that visit with that doctor remotely, you now actually have rich data to share. That's only sort of happening now. And we're not there yet, but I really hope we will be there soon, where the data science coming out of all of this patient-generated data is meaningful and, you know, organized enough for the healthcare system to consume. So I think we still have some gaps there, but certainly some of the other factors are in place.
Yeah, actually, if I can just jump in. So on the actual first afternoon of the conference, we have a really interesting panel about what we call smarter care delivery, which is really amplifying that patient voice. And I just want to make the four demos we have there are really exciting to me. So one is Hilo, which is eClinical Works is sort of attempt to create a whole bunch of consumer-facing pieces from their network of EMRs. A second one is something that Indy just mentioned, a company called Hypnosis, which has got a very intelligent, dumb questionnaire, which basically rules in or out whether you can you know, get away without seeing a doctor or whether you have a problem and need to see one sooner, and you know, can help a doctor see many more patients very quickly online and give them prescriptions. They have something simple like an ear infection or a UTI. A third one is a company called CareSpan, which is kind of like the second or maybe third generation of these new video visits, which has got not only some really cool applications but for the doctor to do a lot more than perhaps over a Teladoc or American World, but also attaches itself to all these different diagnosis devices they're starting out in parts of each places like oil fields and that kind of stuff, where there's maybe only a tech or a low-level provider who can then, you know, where the doctor can manage it. It's kind of like the EICU movement, but more for primary care. And the fourth one, who we're keeping on the wraps to name, but they've got, they're in this category of personal coaching using a combination of video tips, video, live video, and then also, you know, tips and support for people who are, you know, whether they're trying to diet with their diabetes or what have you. So you can see with that spread of things that you've got these range of applications coming out which are really connecting in various different ways and hopefully making more efficient and better the experience between the doctor and the patient. And I think that's a huge part of it, and you know, that's true. So
that's great, and that's a great intro to some of the things that we'll be able to see here in a couple of weeks at Health 2.0. I know that Conversa and our CEO, Wes Schell, is looking forward to participating in that session as well and giving a demonstration of some of our latest and greatest. But could you give us a rundown of some of the keynotes that we can expect at the conference?
Sure. So let me give you a couple, and you can give you a couple more. Starting off on the Monday, Eric Topol, who's very well known in the space, probably the sort of leading doctor advocate for both sort of the digital world and genomics at the Office of the Creative Destruction of Medicine. He's going to be there. Second keynote is a fantastic, amazing speaker called Indy Spire. Indy's got a really cool new talk about data sources and some of the health disparities that are coming out of that. And then on the third one on that day, we have three in a row very quickly, is Donna Cryer, who's the CEO of something called the Global Liver Institute, which is a patient. She's had a patient advocate who's actually had a liver transplant herself and going to talk about her experience. So that's some of the keynotes. We have lots of panels. And then, Indy, do you want to chime in on a couple of the other keynotes?
So we are also going to have a special session with Vinod Khosla, an investor that's obviously been making waves with a number of investments in this space, including a lot. Lifecore, Lumiata, Yazdi, Chiron, and others. So Vinod will be a featured speaker. We're also going to have debuts from Qualcomm and Medtronic on my panel on the consumer technology landscape, so we're looking forward to that. As always, we'll have Launch, which will break companies. And we're going to be showing also on Facebook the first time Thomas Guest's new company, another data analytics play called Iodine. So that will be coming up of the woodwork for the first time at Health 2.0.
Excellent. Well, it's going to be an excellent conference down there in Santa Clara, and I know that given its proximity to Cupertino, that there will be a lot of chatter about the announcement today, Apple Watch and HealthKit and its competitors, especially Samsung and Google. And so here, as we only have a few minutes remaining until our elongated show of 45 minutes wraps up, give us just a real brief glimpse into your thinking about the sectors of this digital health industry. And we've gone from years ago, 8 years ago, being sort of web-based capabilities at Health 2.0 to more native application capabilities to now wearables. As you look ahead to 2015, 2016, what are the sectors that you think are going to become big areas of focus for Health 2.0?
Whoa, you asked a big question there, Phil. So I would say three things. One is we've created a map, which we'll tweet out in a second, which had some play this summer of the old enterprise empire, which is still the biggest part, and then the islands of the alliance of provider rebel alliance, and then the consumer land, and then the patient provider interface in between them. It's kind of like a CMAP. I'll tweet that because it's kind of fun. It gives you an idea of the range of areas within the healthcare system with these new technologies, whether they be, you know, new web HTML5, whether they be native apps, iOS, Android, or some other combination, or you know, the new wearables or the video on demand and the new generation of these things as they come. So I think there's a lot to come there. So I think that's one piece. The second piece is, you know, the two is also the kind of the orders colliding, not just the technologies, but the who's doing what. And you've got players like, so we have Bernard Tyson, relatively new CEO of Kaiser, as a keynote, and also Yong Sang from Samsung, who's the president of Samsung Electronics. He'll be giving a talk as well, and that should be interviewed by Indu. So that kind of gives you an idea of who's really owning health, right? You've got a Kaiser Permanente type organization, which is going to be, has doctors, has hospitals, has members. And then you've got the world of the new consumer players who are moving into health, the electronics, who own other aspects of your life and how that plays out. So I'm excited to see these two pieces come together. All those different technologies you mentioned, including, I think, a lot more wearables with a wearable sock that's going to come, small fabrics, all that kind of, you know, for the body as well as the video stuff, and then the new and old orders coming together from inside and outside of healthcare. And that's really going to be the play for the next, I think, 5 to 10 years. Exciting stuff.
Fantastic. Indu and Matthew, thank you much for being our guests on the show today. Boy, what a great reflection of today's announcements and a great look ahead to what we can anticipate this year at Health 2.0 and for years to come. Thank you again, and have a great conference.
Thank you.
And there you have it. That'll be the last word on the kickoff to Countdown to Health 2.0 Fall Conference. 2014. I want to thank our guests, Matthew Hoke, Indu Sibaya, co-chairman, co-founders, and co-partners in the Health 2.0 Conference Venture. I want to thank my returning guest, my co-host and colleague, Dr. Phil Marshall, back from vacation. And we do this weekly. We'll resume next week, perhaps on our usual time, Wednesday, for the next session of This Week in Health Innovation. So Greg Masters for Phil Marshall, thank you now, and we'll see you next time. Bye now.